ज्ञानं परं स्वात्मरः प्रकाशं प्रोवाच कस्मै भगवन् समग्रम् आपीक्ष्ममं नो ग्रहणाय पार्थार् पदञ्जसयाद्वृजिनं धरेम।
Oh my Lord, kindly explain to us if you think us competent to receive it. That transcendental knowledge which gives enlightenment about yourself and which you explained before to Brahmaji,
purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
A pure devotee like Uddhava has no material afflictions because he engages constantly in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. A devotee feels afflicted without the association of the Lord. Constant remembrance of the Lord's activities keeps the devotee alive, and therefore Uddhava requested that the Lord please enlighten him with the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam as previously instructed to Brahmaji. This verse that we are reading this evening is from the section of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto, wherein Vidura is approaching his spiritual master, Maitreya Muni, for instruction. Here we find Uddhava. His speaking to Lord Sri Krishna. He is approaching submissively. He is not demanding. In transcendental knowledge, we must understand, it is a different approach than mundane knowledge. In material education, you pay some fees, you pass some exams, you're admitted to a university, and they must teach you. Your qualification is that you have the proper academic skills, you have paid your dues, and you're willing to follow certain rules according to the college. And then it is the duty of the teacher to instruct you what you have paid for. But spiritual knowledge is not like this at all. Spiritual knowledge is given and received on the basis of love and trust. You cannot pay a spiritual master, nor is it the spiritual master's duty to give anyone anything on the basis of material qualifications. There's only one qualification required to receive spiritual knowledge, and that is humility and submissiveness. Advidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadeshatite jnanam jnaninastuta darshana. Krishna says in Gita, one should approach Gurudev and inquire submissively and have a willingness to render service. See, in a college, you are not obliged to serve your teacher. Material education can be transferred on the intellectual platform. Similarly, scriptural knowledge and the intellectual platform can be transferred on the intellectual platform. You can pay a spiritual master. You can have certain intellectual qualifications, and you can hear from him, and you can understand, and you can even be able to repeat very nicely. But that is not what Krishna is speaking about in Gita. He is speaking about that knowledge purifying your heart, entering into your consciousness and transforming your life. We see that oftentimes spiritual life is approached just like mundane knowledge. You go, you sit, you learn. We find so many times there is some speaker of the Bhagavat, or there is a speaker on Gita, or there is a speaker on Ramayana, and people, sometimes by the dozens, sometimes by the hundreds, sometimes by the tens and thousands, they go and they sit and they listen. And they can even repeat what they have heard. But generally we find that there's not a change in their life. There's not a realization, a dedication, and a sense of surrender to God. Instead, we find some intellectual education, some stimulus to the mind and intelligence, and sometimes some just wonderful entertainment. A lot of joking words, a lot of fabulous stories being told. And no doubt, this is nice. But what we are reading here in the scriptures about how the real great souls have received knowledge, it is a different thing. They are approaching with a submissive, humble heart, with a willingness to serve. When our consciousness is in that state, then the spiritual master or the great devotee of the Lord can truly impart, imbibe realization and spiritual understanding within our heart. That is why we find in these scriptures wonderful stories. There's one story our Gurudev would tell about a Brahmin. He was very learned, and he was very much expert at all types of puja and ritualistic performances. And he was also very famous for his being a great pundit. But he was also very proud. It's very difficult to have all these qualifications and not become proud. And across the street there was a prostitute who had no education, who had no moral principles, as far as the society could see. And the Brahmin was constantly using her as an example of degradation. He was publicly revealing to everyone what a wretched, terrible sinner she was. Just so happened, they both died at the same time. The Vishnu Dutas, the residents of Vaikuntha, were seen by the Brahmin through his window coming on a fair flower airplane to take that prostitute back to Godhead. And he saw in his room the Yamadutas, the messengers of hell, coming with their ropes, binding his neck and his limbs, ready to drag him down to the trail of ignorance. He looked at the Yamadutas and he said, that you have your addresses mixed up, I believe. They're supposed to be here, and you're supposed to be there. After all, she's a sinner, and I'm a great saint. So, no, this is the address. You're supposed to go to hell. And according to the delivery papers, she's supposed to go back to Godhead. What is this nonsense? I'm very moral, and I'm very much learned in the scriptures, and I'm a guru, and people touch my feet. You know what they touch? What parts of her they touch? They touch my feet. Huh? They said to him, yes, you are learned. According to our report, you are learned, and you are very moral, and you are very famous, and you are also very, very proud and offensive to others. And according to our report, yes, she engages in many sinful activities, but she's helpless. Her family's forcing her to do it to maintain them. They're poor. It's the only thing she knows. And the whole while she's doing it, she's praying, God, please forgive me. I'm the most sinful of all sinners. You think you're the saint of all saints. She thinks she's the most sinful of all sinners. Therefore, she's going back to Godhead, and you come down to hell. Haribo. So we find so many examples of this, where if a person can simply approach a saintly person with submissiveness and a desire to serve, that person is fit for the highest perfection of life. But if we try to manipulate a saintly person, if we demand from them, if we expect from them, that is our disqualification. Here, he is explaining to his guru, kindly explain to us, if you think us competent to receive it, the transcendental knowledge which gives enlightenment. We must learn to discriminate by a person's external behavior. But at the same time, we must understand the limitations of our own material vision. One of the great acharyas was very, very strong to make clear this idea. In fact, many of them were, but I'll use one for example. There was a great devotee of the name Gorakishore Das Babaji. He is our Param Param Guru. He is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who is the spiritual master of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, who is my beloved Guru Maharaj. So, through this Gorakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, we are receiving the transcendental gift of love of God, of prema bhakti, transcendental knowledge. There is a story of a very, very wealthy landowner who was extremely famous as being an exalted saintly person. And whenever people would chant the holy names of the Lord, he would just start to weep and cry and tremble, and sometimes he would just fall down unconscious. And other times, even when no one was chanting, simply he would just see something that would remind him of Krishna, and he would begin incessantly crying, and he would begin to tremble, and he would fall unconscious. And because of this falling unconscious and falling down and trembling and crying, he had many disciples and followers. People were really, really impressed by him. They thought he's exhibiting ecstatic symptoms of love of God. And therefore, followers had to constantly be with him by his side to make sure he didn't hurt himself by falling down. And they had one person had to hold him to make sure he was all right, and he was always trembling and crying and going, Radhe Krishna, Radhe Radhe Krishna Krishna. So one day they came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and there was a whole group of people all sitting and listening to Gaurakishore Das Babaji speak from the Bhagavatam. And there was a very pious disciple with him, and they came, and the man was trembling, and he said that, Babaji Maharaj, I have been going to many places because there's a certain very confidential and intimate truth that was discussed between Ramananda Rai and Lord Chaitanya that I would like to hear explained for clarification. And then his follower spoke, Babaji Maharaj, we would like to hear this information from you. He said, my Gurudev here, he said, he is so much in ecstatic trance that he cannot really walk properly without me holding him. As you can see, he's crying and he's trembling. And everybody in the room was just looking at him like this, oh, very great saint. So please explain to me. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji said to his follower, he said, if you want to understand this message, the first thing you have to do is absolutely give up association with this rascal that you're holding on to, who's simply a cheap pretender trying to get fame and popularity. If a person actually loves God, he will keep those inner feelings within himself as far as possible. Not wanting to bring about cheap fame for himself. He said, to atone for whatever you've heard from him, you should come and associate with true devotees who are humble and gentle, and you should hear the Chaitanya Charitamrita 100 times. And then he said, start kirtan. And they all began to chant. And after they all left, people were asking Gaurakishore Das Babaji, but he seemed to be such a great devotee of the Lord. Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, just like a chaste wife, she doesn't exhibit her body before another man, only her husband. Similarly, a true devotee of the Lord only exhibits his innermost ecstasies to Krishna within his heart. He doesn't go and show them to the ordinary people because they will not understand. Only pretenders will do like this. We find in the life of Krishna himself the attitude in which we should approach a saintly person. Not for a show, not for a demonstration, but for the purpose of learning and desiring to serve. It is described when Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, who is Jagat Guru, when he left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, he killed Kamsa. After he killed Kamsa, Vasudeva and Devaki were, alas, after so many long years, they were freed from the prison house. And Krishna said to Nanda and Yashoda that, please, you have raised me so dearly as your son. But now my real mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, they have suffered so much in separation from me. Let me stay with them for some time. So then Nanda and Yashoda went back to Vrindavan. And then Krishna approached Vasudeva and Devaki and told them that I will satisfy all of your desires. Whatever time I was not with you, now I am yours. Raise me as your beloved child. So one of the first things Vasudev did is he wanted to demonstrate what is the real duty of a parent. Guru na sasyat, svajini na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janini na sasyat. The real duty of a parent, first and foremost, is to make sure that their child becomes a perfect lover of God, becomes a self-realized soul, never has to take birth and suffer again in this world. Education, having nice food, having nice clothing, having a nice home to sleep, they are all secondary. They are important, but they are secondary. They are all only important insofar as they are facilitating the most important thing, and that is self-realization. So Vasudev, after embracing Krishna and Balaramji and weeping tears of love for them, first he had him initiated with the sacred thread, Krishna and Balaram. Vasudeva arranged Garga Muni, the family priest, to give them the Gayatri Mantra and to teach them the regulative principles by which they should chant this mantra and live. And shortly after that, they decided that our beloved child, Krishna and Balaram, they need very, very wonderful spiritual training. You know, try to understand. They hadn't seen Krishna for, it was about 12 years and 8 months. They would hear rumors about him in Vrindavan that Agasura, Putana, Trinavarta, Keshi, Aghasura, Vatsasura, Bakasura, Pralambasura, Sakatasura. They would hear, while they were in their prison house, they heard about all these mighty, terrible, mystic demons coming to kill them and how Krishna would destroy them all. And they would hear stories about how Krishna was dancing with gopis and how Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj were so lovingly and tenderly caring for them. And meanwhile, Vasudev and Devaki, they were just feeling simultaneously so much pleasure that Krishna was receiving so much love and so much affection from his foster parents. But at the same time, they were feeling grief in their hearts that we had 7 children in a row that were murdered by Kamsa right before our eyes. And then by the arrangement of Yogamaya, we had a child that was appeared to be a miscarriage, transferred from my womb to the womb of Rohini. And then finally, the eighth child, Krishna, when he was born, that very night of his birth, as we saw his beauty, the emblem of all opulence sitting before us, can you imagine when a mother sees an infant child in this world, how she immediately falls in love with that child? Huh? We have heard. When that child comes out of their womb and they look at it, it's just love at first sight between a mother and a child. And, I mean, let's face it. What does a human child look like when they just come out of the womb? Huh? They're not really very attractive at all. They look something like dried fruit, right? Like raisins or something.
They're all shriveled and they're crying and their eyes can't see and they're numb. And yet this, oh, my beloved Jesus. I love you, I love you, I love you. Ah, that's a mother's love for child. Can you imagine if your child is Krishna? He wasn't dried fruit. He was beautiful. Beautiful blue complexion, completely like blossom lotus eyes. Every limb of his body was the emblem of ultimate beauty. And the object of all love. And yet they were told on that very night, within minutes of seeing him, bring me across the Jamuna and give me to Vasudeva and Devaki and leave me there. Can you imagine what a heartbreaking thing that would be? But because it was the will of the Lord, they obeyed. And Vasudeva and Devaki brought Krishna, Vasudeva brought Krishna across Jamuna to Gokul Dham, Mahavan, in exchange for little Yogamaya, a little girl that was born of Yashoda. And they didn't even get to keep her. As soon as he brought her back, she started to cry. And then Kamsa came and lifted her to kill her, and she went into the sky and said, Kamsa, the person meant to kill you is somewhere else, and you will die. Haribo. And then she went. She just went. Vasudeva and Devaki, they were left alone in prison. And for that 12 years and 8 months that Krishna was having wonderful lila with Yashoda and Nanda, most all that time, they were sitting in a prison cell with no children, no freedom. So after all this time, you can imagine, what does it say? Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Huh? It says that absence makes the heart grow fonder, and tears are the rain that makes love grow. So when Krishna and Balaram, after so long, it was their first vision of them. They came into Mathura. They killed Kamsa. And then they were sitting with their mother and father and said, now we will stay with you. Now we are yours. Their love was so intense. It was so pure. They were so happy to be with Krishna. But what's the first thing they did for Krishna as their parents? The first thing was they brought them to their family priest to give him the mantra and teach them the regulative principles. And right after that, they sent Krishna to northern India to the ashram of Sandipani Muni to study and learn spiritual principles from him and then come home. This, you can imagine, is a great sacrifice. But it's the expression of true love. And Krishna and Balaram, although they are the Supreme Lord, they are Krishna is the original Godhead, and Balaram is none different from him, the original expansion of Godhead. So here is the absolute truth, the one without a second, in two divine forms, who are the source of all knowledge and the source of all creation. But they were just children, just approaching their teens. And when they went to Sandipani's Muni Ashram, they shaved their heads and kept the sika. People ask, what is the shika? What does it mean? There are many explanations. But in Sanskrit, the word shika means flame. Because you see, in this world, there is the force of gravity. And everything within this world by nature goes down. Huh? Like your body. You can stand up for so much time, but actually the forces of gravity is to make you go down. You jump up, just like in Kirtan, we jumped up. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we just kept going up? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Haribo! You just go up anywhere you like. No, you go up and then you go down. And some people like Devamrita, they come down like this. Some people like Raghunath, they come down like this. And Sarvabhauma, he comes down like this. So according to the density of our particular mass construction, then we come down or up in different ways. But we all have to go down. And anything you throw up comes down. Huh? So it is the law of gravity that everything by nature is going down in this material world. That is symbolic, is it not? That the law of material nature is to push everything down. But there are two things within this creation that by nature go up. One is fire. Fire, by nature, doesn't go down. It goes up. It defies the law of gravity. And the other is transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge, by nature, anything it comes in contact with, brings it up. But everything mundane, all mundane knowledge, all mundane everything, pushes you down. But anything that is connected to transcendental knowledge goes up. So Shika means a student of transcendental knowledge. And that transcendental knowledge, like a flame, brings us upward. So Krishna and Balaram, they accepted. And when they approached their Gurudev, Sandipani Muni, they approached him exemplary for all of us to understand how to approach a saintly person. They approached with all submissiveness, like obedient menial servants. And Sandipani Muni was teaching them so many wonderful arts. There's pages and pages in the Bhagavatam explaining the basic arts that they were taught. Not only scripture, but so many practical things. Like painting and drawing. Even taught him how you can tell what's in a person's hand if it's closed. All such nice things, huh? But most of all, they were taught everything in relationship to the Absolute Truth. And meanwhile, Krishna and Balaram were such humble servants. At that particular time, there was one Brahman of the name Sudama who lived in the ashram. And you know the story that Sandipani Muni's wife instructed that, my dear boys, please go and collect some wood for the yajna. Because they were performing yajnas. So they went into the forest to just pick up wood. Huh? This is usually the occupation of a very menial servant. Usually if you tell a big politician, go to the forest and collect wood. I think I've been trained to pick up wood. I've been trained to rule men. Right? Or you tell a big industrialist, president of his factory. You go to the forest, pick up wood. He'll say, you know who you're talking to? Do you know my name? You pick up the wood, huh? Or I'll send my servants to pick up the wood, huh? Who's Krishna? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his guru told him, you go pick up wood. Yes, master. For you I will pick up wood.
And he and Sudama went deeper and deeper and deeper into the forest looking for nice pieces of wood, collecting it, bringing it back. So in this way, Vasudeva and Devaki taught Krishna how to submissively inquire from a saintly person, how to learn from him, and how to be his menial servant. They considered this is the first most important expression of love that we can offer to our child. And they were willing to make such a sacrifice for that. It is described that after Krishna's education in Balaram, they approached their guru and bowed down at his lotus feet and said, "Guru Maharaj, we are so grateful to you for what you have given. Now it is our duty to offer you Guru Dakshin, to offer you some gift. What can we do?" Now Sandipani Muni knew full well that Krishna was the absolute truth. Therefore he decided that I must ask for a dakshin from you that no common men can do, just to show the world how great you are. Huh? So some years ago, we had a little child, and he drowned in the ocean while he was on the shore of Prabhasak Chetra. I would like you to bring him back to life and bring him here and let him live the rest of his life with us. Nice life. Krishna and Balaram said, "Whatever way we can serve you, we will." So they went to Prabhasak Chetra. They approached the ocean. And they requested the deity of the ocean to become present. At that time, the presiding deity of the entire ocean came before Krishna. And Krishna said, "My Gurudev, his little son, Sandipani Muni's boy, he drowned here some years ago. I want him back." The ocean said, "He didn't drown because of me. What happened is there was a demon of the name Panchajanya, and he ate Sandipani Muni's child. And that demon is in my ocean somewhere." So Krishna immediately dove into the ocean and went right to Panchajana and killed him and brought him back and put the conch shell on the his body was a conch shell, and put him back on the chariot that he was driving, but there was no sun inside. So Krishna and Balaram went all the way to the abode of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj was so happy. Yamaraj was a Mahajan. He understood that he may be looking like a little boy with sikha and shaved head and 12, 13-year-old child, but actually I know who he really is. Here is the Lord of Death, who is the master of practically everyone in this world, ultimately. He makes the final decisions for all persons who are not God's devotees of where they must be destined. But when he saw Krishna with humble obeisances, he said, "How can I serve you?" Krishna Balaram said, "Sandipani Muni's son, please give him to me. I want to bring him back into the earth." He said, "Yes, here is his son. Take him." So Krishna brought the little boy back to Sandipani Muni and his mother and said, "Here is your child. Is there any other service we can render?" And Sandipani Muni was so happy. He said, "You are the supreme bestower of all blessings. But you are asking me for a blessing? Because it is your desire, I will bless you." Just like he explained that just like the ocean, water is evaporated from the ocean and forms into cloud, and then that cloud is pulled by the wind to the mountains, and then it pours water, and that water fills up the rivers, and then the rivers go back down into the ocean. Huh? So like that. You are the supreme bestower of all blessings, but by your divine arrangement, you are asking me to give you a blessing, so I will give you a blessing. My blessing is whatever you speak will be absolutely true, without any question, without any doubt. And my next blessing is that your wonderful pastimes will be supremely attractive to give liberation to all great, all fortunate souls who hear them submissively. And then Krishna, very happy to receive these blessings, bowed down to his guru. And then Sandipani Muni said, now, he said, I am so much immersed in pleasure because I have disciples like you. Now you please go home. And with permission, they went home to Vasudeva and Devaki and lived for so many long years with them. They lived about 112 years with Vasudeva and Devaki. As the supreme object of pleasure to every aspect of their life. When Krishna appears, sometimes he shows his supreme position as the absolute truth or God. He lifts the Govardhan hill. He expands himself as 16,108 forms simultaneously. He speaks the Bhagavad Gita. But sometimes he shows us how we should live. He pretends to be a human being to show us the path of perfection. To learn the art of hearing transcendental knowledge with a submissive heart and a desire to serve is the most important consideration in our human birth. And more than anything else, to teach this to our children, to inculcate this principle in the hearts of our children, is our greatest responsibility as parents. Just 2 days back, some of our devotees were speaking to me about a little 19-year-old girl who somehow or other came into a type of association where she became rich and famous. Huh? What kind of association? You know the story? It was in the papers. She was only 19. What is a 19-year-old girl? What do they know? Huh? But they think they know. Everyone thinks they know. She was beautiful. She was famous. She was fabulously wealthy. She was very, very skilled in her profession. She must have been incredibly intelligent. To memorize lines and all these things, you need a very fertile brain. She had all of these opulences. But what is drinking? People question. This was the question I read in the newspaper. Did she commit suicide or was she just so drunk she just fell off? Huh? Suicide means you're so frustrated with life that you can't face it and you want to end it. But factually, drinking alcohol and taking drugs is the same thing. People take alcohol and take drugs because they're so frustrated with life
that they don't want to face it. They want to forget. The only difference is one's a temporary suicide and one's a final suicide. You get drunk because you don't want to face the world. You want to forget everything. You want to just annihilate, suicide. And hope that when you sober up, things might be better. But usually they're worse. Huh? So then you have to do it again. So in either case, this person, poor little soul, was frustrated with life. Totally frustrated. So what is the use of having millions of dollars, being famous, being skillful, being intelligent, and being beautiful if you're frustrated with life? The beggars in the street, they're not so frustrated with life. They beg for a rupee so that they can go on living. Obviously, they're not so frustrated because they want to go on living. But the we must know that our society is leading all our youth to this type of consciousness, to think that beauty and social acceptance and popularity and money and skills, that these are going to make us happy. Huh? You must know that your children are completely within the jaws of a society that's leaving everyone to this consciousness, which is a consciousness which brings frustration, loneliness, and emptiness. By their parents giving an example and giving an opportunity for children to learn what is really pleasure, what is really the goal of life. You can be an actress, you can be an actor, you can be a politician, you can be a writer, a poet, a businessman, a lawyer, a doctor, a housewife, a student. But if you do it with an understanding of the goal of life, with the inner satisfaction of devotion to God, then your life is a success. Then nothing can impede the fulfillment of your life. Sandipani Muni taught Krishna and Balaram so many arts, but it was all on the basis of service to the Absolute Truth. This is the first consideration that we must put in our own lives and in the lives of those who are depending on us. Ultimately, they have their choice. They can accept or reject. But it is our duty to give them a chance. And in giving, we receive. The more we try to give Krishna to others, the more Krishna gives himself to us. That is the spiritual principle. Material principle is the more you give, the less you have. But spiritually, the laws are opposite of material laws. Spiritually, the more you give, the more you have. And spiritually, materially, the more you try to keep, the more you have. But spiritually, the more you try to keep, the less you have. Our Guru Maharaj used to say, whatever I'm giving you, you must repay me by giving it to others. Huh? He said, whatever money you receive, he told us in our temples, whatever money you receive, don't worry about saving it. Use it for the benefit of others. Distribute food. Distribute books. Distribute knowledge. Use it for the real welfare of society. Don't keep it. Of course, family people, they have to keep something. But we should know that our advancement in life is, we may have to keep something, but what we are giving is how much we will receive the blessings of God. We are not speaking just about money. We are speaking about knowledge, about love and blessings. The more we give to our children, and in Vedic culture, a grihastha is supposed to consider everyone, his children, on a secondary platform. On the first platform, we have our children. But then we should consider every poor person in need is also our child. That willingness to serve God and serve humanity and to submissively hear is the qualification by which we can not be dragged down by the laws of nature, but we can go up. Lifted, liberated from the pains and struggles of worldly life. Physically, materially, we have to struggle in this material world. You can't stop. But our heart, our consciousness, should be transcendental, above and beyond all of these dualities. To be in this world, but not of this world. This is the real goal of life. And this is the gift we should be aspiring to achieve. And distribute it to all we love. Thank you very much. Haribol.